when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and I question the serving suggestions on crisps. Joining me is a woman who advocates dip as being an entire meal, Laura Goodman.
Hello.
You changed my life with this book, I think. You wrote a book called Snack, Joy of Snacks.
I did.
Which
yep.
took me a long time to realise was a pun.
Yeah, I know. It is quite a subtle pun.
It is. You have to say it out loud to get it.
I know. I think Nigella posted something about it, and I think she thought she had discovered the pun herself. It's like, oh, that means it wasn't a good pun, but never mind. Anyway, that's what it's called.
The thing is that like I do think that like we are at a strange place in culture in terms of how we eat.
Yes.
In that I don't really know anyone who has three square meals a day, I don't think.
No. I mean, I think that's the thing for me about both snacks and carbs, which is what my first book was about, is that, like, when you asked me to be on this podcast, I was thinking, oh, I don't really think that much about whether society wants us to be ashamed of eating those things, which is obviously rubbish. I obviously do think about those things, but I'm obviously so in denial about it that I just prefer to write as though we've all agreed food is food. When I know that is not true, I know we haven't totally agreed that yet. I know that there are still things that we're ashamed of. But what it's always been about for me is just like admitting how we actually eat rather than, you know, like spending our lives pretending we're going to start eating differently. Like admitting this is the way we eat and doing it as best we can.
Yeah.
You know, this
no,
is...
No, totally, yeah. Like, we do sort of live our lives as if we're going to begin eating differently tomorrow.
Yes, we do.
Which is something that you cover quite early in the book of being like, I'd stop pretending that any of us are actually going to, like, keep a stack of boiled eggs in our fridge.
Or, yeah.
Like, are actually going to batch cook couscous. This will not be the year where you do that.
No. And if it was, then would you really be that happy about it? I mean... That seems so depressing.
That's it. Even if you do have a successful couple of weeks where you manage to batch cook a thing like curry or whatever on Sunday night and then you portion it into your things and then you eat it during the week.
Yeah.
By Wednesday, you want to kill yourself.
Yes, you do. You do. And even like you feel good if you spend your whole Sunday cooking, but you've also lost half your weekend.
Yeah.
Cooking, not doing anything else.
In terms of like how we actually eat, I think... But I think you have a family, you have small children, and I don't. So I imagine maybe our patterns are a little bit different.
Yeah.
In that, like, my actual eating routine is probably, go around the corner for a coffee and a piece of banana bread in the morning. Then probably have a couple of pieces of toast at like noon, and then forget to eat lunch, and then have a very weirdly timed bowl of ramen at 4:15, meaning I am then too sort of full for dinner, but also I will eat again, and then I'll make like a yogurt-based dip at 8 o'clock, which I will eat in front of the Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
With
That's
some
it.
Crisps. And that is so bad for you, but it is also the way
Real
I
life.
Eat.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I find it hard to answer this question because I don't even know how I eat right now. I'm in such a strange place. And I was thinking, you know, there's a bit in the beginning of the book where I talk about the sort of joyful moment when you decide you're going to eat a family-sized bag of crisps.
Yeah.
And is that a joyful moment or is it a horrible moment? It's up to you to decide, really. And it can go both ways. Like, there are moments where I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to eat this. And I feel really good about it. And then there are moments where it's like, I'm still holding my baby. It's 2 p.m. I haven't got dressed. I haven't eaten anything else. I'm eating a whole bag of crisps. Not so good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it. It goes both ways. But I think as much as possible, like, let's just be honest about how we're eating and let's do it as best we can.
Yeah.
Like, let's have as much fun as we can.
So, which is why it was so gorgeous reading this book, because it was like, there was nothing of the, because I think if you read any of those sort of like classic diet plans or whatever that are all over the internet and all over the insides of our brains, because yeah. we glanced them in a Cosmo in 2002 and now it just sits there.
Yeah.
Which is why I think so many people have this sort of idea of like the handful of almonds.
Yeah.
Where these, like all, even the strictest diets will allow for the fact that snacking exists.
Yeah.
Be like, as a snack, try something, freeze-dried broccoli or something, you know, something insane. But they will, even they will admit, people who are trying to get you to eat like 1,000 calories a day will admit that you must chew on something, which sort of tells me that snacking is so innate to human behavior that even people who are trying to limit their calories severely will attest to it, you know?
I'm sure, and, you know, to be honest, I don't know this, I can't remember, and I probably should know, but I'm sure it's not actually good for you to only eat 3 times a day, is it? I don't think that's good for you.
It doesn't feel natural.
To eat more often than that. I don't know. Anyway. But yeah, the handful of almond things. I remember that. And I remember that from, you know, working in offices and stuff. And just like, God, you're already, it's already this horrible lifestyle where you see no one, do nothing, and you sit at your desk for 9 hours. And
the grimmest view of office culture. See no one, do nothing, and sit at your desk for 9 hours.
Yes, yeah,
sending emails to people who don't want them.
Yeah.
Who crucially don't want them.
They don't want them at all. No one wants them. Oh, God. And then on top of that, all you're allowed to eat is 5 almonds. Oh, God.
Do you know what I remember? It's so, like, it's really, and it, actually, I hadn't thought of it until I was reading this book. And that's actually what I loved about it, was that, like, because you have these like recipes and little diatribes about various different kinds of snack food, which are so funny and well written. And then you'll just have like little chapters of like periods of your life and what snacks you were eating and places you were in the world and stuff. And it really brought me back to several different places in my life. And one of those places was sort of 2013, where I was, you know, working in offices properly for the first time. And Gray's boxes.
Oh yeah.
I think people forget that you see a Gray's segment in like WH Smith or something. It's like, oh, here's like a chili nut thing that you can just sort of like fist into your mouth
yeah.
and then slam into a bin and run onto a train.
Yeah.
But we forget that that Gray's boxes started much like Netflix started, which was like discs in the post.
Yes, it did.
It would show up at your office for like £5 a week, and it would give you these little sad segmented
things. Oh, God,
things.
So sad.
Lemon flapjack with yogurt drizzle. And you were supposed to make these snacks last the whole week.
But the thing is, not only were they sad, but they sort of sold themselves on not being sad. Like, they really thought they were...
yeah.
They thought they were fun. They were like, this
is gonna...
They
thought they were fun. And I thought they were fun for a minute.
Yeah.
Got like a voucher. Someone handed me a voucher on the coming out of the tube, like 25% off, buy one, get one free, whatever. I was like, this seems fun.
So it's like walnuts, but it's got like cinnamon on it. Okay.
Wasabi peas in a little plastic container. I cannot believe they're on... The Greys are on the ride of their life.
They are.
I can't believe that was successful enough that like enough big... sort of shop branches like WH Smith or whatever have bought into that, and now people are buying it.
Yeah, God, I hadn't thought about them for ages, but you're right, they are still around, aren't they?
Yeah. I will say, however, their bag of like Marmite Crunch is actually fucking delicious.
Is
but
it?
Then again, Marmite have not put a foot wrong, ever.
No?
Every single thing that Marmite mixes itself with, whether it's the hummus or the peanut butter or whatever, it's fucking insane. It's so good. It's already the best version of what that thing can be.
I don't think I've had the peanut butter, but I have had everything else, I think, and it was all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Props to Marmite, sponsors of this podcast.
Well done, Marmite.
Well done, Marmite. You begin the book with this, like, definition on crispiness.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It starts from... an article that I read in Bon Appetit about how crispy as a whole industry in America, but also in the world, and how there are just like tons of scientists dedicated to making crispy crispier and like finding new routes to crispy, because crispy is essentially like a joy in your mouth. Like the feeling and the sound of like a crisp shattering in your mouth brings you joy, and that's not in your imagination, that is real.
Why?
it's true.
That is the sort of the word that you see on a menu that sort of sticks out.
It is.
Like when I think of the first, when I was like very young and like eating in very bad Chinese restaurants for the first time, like not real Chinese restaurant, like proper gloopy takeaway or whatever, and seeing the phrase crispy duck for the first time, and just like knowing even my 12-year-old heart, like, yeah, something about those two words together are yes. And then having the crispy duck and it being sort of the consistency of scabs, but still being like, in my head.
Yeah.
There's something about that that just like has an effect on people.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember it from like the youngest age with roast potatoes. Just like the crispy bits in the bottom of the tray. You know, if my mum hasn't sprinkled those on my dinner, does she like my brothers better than me or something? Like, where are they? You know?
I had that exact same thing. I remember judging my mum's love for me via my plate a lot. And like casting these like little Victorian asides in my head of being like, she cares for my brother more than I.
I mean, I did always get the crispy bits, I have to say.
Okay.
So.
Well, fair enough.
And here we are, right?
And look, here we are.
It goes even further than that, because it's also like they, these people who develop crisp products will try and make it a sort of sensory experience for you. So everything from like the opening of the packet, the sound that makes, the sort of flavour hitting you when you open the bag. You know, it is supposed to sort of knock you sideways a little bit. And it does sometimes. If you're starving, it really does.
It's so, like, I realised recently that, actually probably in and around reading of your book, like, I've been an on-off smoker since I was about 14, kind of thing. And I'm sort of lucky that I've never been very addicted to it, in that, like, I'll always, like, have a pack of fags in my house, and it could, that pack of fags could last 2 months or could last 2 weeks, depending on the kind of time I'm having.
Yeah.
You know? But I have never gone a day since my teens without having a bag of crisps.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's happened.
No, I don't think so either. And I am also, I really notice the moment in the afternoon where I'll be like, oh, I haven't had my crisps
yet today. Had my crisps.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, well, that's turned the afternoon around.
So true.
Unless you, and then, you know, on the other hand, if you fancy a bag of crisps and you're like, oh, but I did already have one, then you're like, oh, that's taken the edge off a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it does a bit. And yeah, there's something different about having two different occasions in your day where you go to a shop and pick up a little thing of crisps.
Yeah.
That feels like you've let yourself down.
Yeah.
But making a choice to be like, I'm going to watch my Gilmore Girls.
Yes,
with
exactly.
My big thing of family-sized Doritos.
That's it, making a choice, isn't it? It's like
different.
When it's like, oh, I accidentally haven't eaten enough other food to be not hungry. Mm. That's not so good.
I failed myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that there's like, over the last few years, and I don't read a huge amount of food writing. Obviously, I read Ella Risbridger, who is my best pal, and everything she writes is brilliant.
Yeah.
And actually, I was just saying before the podcast started that you and her have this very similar thing that I love, which is that both of you write food books that don't have photographs in them.
Mm.
And I think there's something a bit revolutionary about that, because you're creating this imaginative world with your own reader, being like, imagine what it would be like to have a big cheesy onion dip that you made for your friends, and just think of that ooze, and that way you're not putting this big this beautiful food stylized photograph saying like, this is what I made for my friends, go fuck yourself, you can't make this. I don't read a ton of food writing, but I have noticed that there's been this thing over the last few years of like, because I think more women are choosing sort of not to be partnered, to live alone. There's more women living alone than ever.
Yeah.
That you should like have these solo beautiful meals every night that are just fantastic, lovely egg, lovely broccoli, lovely yams, and it's all photographed beautifully.
Well, first of all, I should say my first book did have a lot of photos and they were really heavily styled. That was sort of a conscious choice as well. But actually, it was a conscious choice to be like, look how heavily styled these are. This is basically a joke. Mm-hmm. Yours isn't meant to look like this.
Oh, really?
You know, like, you know, they were in urns and things. And like, you know, it was ridiculous.
Like crematorium urns.
I mean, yeah.
That's bizarre. And I need to pick up your first book. That's so funny.
Like, there was just, you know, it was wild. And that was sort of the point. And then this book went the other way. Because, yes, I agree. And, like, you know, the worst thing for me is, like, a little ruffled piece of linen. Just like, oh, I just finished my meal and I scattered my napkin just here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, it doesn't do it for me. In fact, I was really excited to be asked to be on this podcast for a lot of reasons. But one of them is because I sometimes feel like I am the sentimental garbage of food right.
Yeah, I think you might
because
be. Yeah.
I feel like I get a lot of messages from people saying they love my book, but they say it in a way that's like, unbelievably, I loved your silly book. or they'll be like,
that's so unbelievably, I loved your silly book.
Or they'll be like, God, this book was funny, which is weird. Like, why was it funny? I don't really get it. What? But I liked it. But I'll never say out loud to anyone else that I liked it because it was weird.
No way. I've seen loads of people shouting about this on their Instagram stories, which I think is actually how I came across it. Was somebody photographed a funny paragraph and I was like, that's a funny paragraph.
Thanks.
But yeah, you definitely are, which is why I felt such a kinship when I read it, and that it was like an immediate, like, this has to be on the podcast thing of, like, it's a very garbagey way of eating.
Yeah.
And I just love your, like, nasty little aside sometimes. Like, my favourite line in the whole book is you're talking about cookies. And,
I know what you mean.
The sentence is something like, is it just me or is everyone bad at their jobs?
Yeah.
Talking specifically to how many disappointing cookies that you've had in your life.
Yeah. People are bad at their jobs though, aren't they?
People are bad at their jobs.
And I get it. Life is hard and I can't always be bothered to do everything. But, you know, you got to do your job as best you can. You got to. And, yeah, there are a lot of bad cookies out there and it is still unbelievable to me all the many different ways in which they can be bad. I mean, I guess mostly it's just they're too hard usually. But it's not, you know, if I can make, I know I've written about food, but I'm not like a chef. If I can make a good cookie, why can't you? You're charging me for a cookie. Why can't you make a good one?
Up to £3 for a cookie.
Yes.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
And then now I've got kids and, you know, I'll be out with my daughter and she'll want a cookie and I'll be like, well,
no, you don't.
That's going to be bad.
It's going to be bad. There's definitely like a thread on this podcast about shit cookies. On the Sex and the City series that we did.
Yeah.
I really railed against Ben's cookies. Which I hate, and I also hate Millie's cookies.
Yeah.
I think they both suck. I think if you are walking down, you know, Oxford Street.
Yeah, the smell.
The smell is nice. Same with Wafflemeister. You'll get that smell outside Bond Street and you'll think you want that, but you actually don't.
You do not.
The best cookie that you're going to be able to find on a high street is in a Subway, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think they're great. By any chance, by
but
any
they're all
stretch.
Just bad.
They're all just a bit bad. They're all, and I think they're just a bit too fleshy. You know,
God, that made me gag.
I'm sorry to bring that to you at 10:45. But they're wet. They're soggy.
They are. I mean, I just feel like people get by on not cooking the cookie.
Yeah,
you know, like you can make it chewy inside without serving me raw cookie dough.
Awful.
that's cheating.
It's a human rights violation.
It is.
I believe. And I really felt it in that essay. And I also think that, and this thought is literally forming as I'm thinking it, but I think there's the rise in sort of millennial work patterns, which mm-hmm. I think is responsible for a lot of this sort of snacking culture that's taking over, that we're all, more people are making their own hours. Even if they're like employed gainfully, they're working from home, time, whatever. More people are working in cafes as well.
Yes.
And what we have then is a snack buy that is actually you buying more hours at the cafe.
Yeah, that's true.
And we all know that. And so I think standards are slipping.
Oh God, I didn't think about it like that, but that's true. I always talk about this in Walthamstow because there are so many parents like me and we're all so tired and so desperate for to interact with other people that the standard of food is so bad.
Really?
Just like the pub food and the cafe food is so bad. And it does feel a bit hopeless because you're like, well, it's not going to get better because we're all still buying it anyway. And I think
it's so true.
I think it's the same, probably the same thing with working in cafes. Yeah.
Yeah. Standards have slipped. Why aren't more people good at their jobs?
And yet prices are.
Yeah. Exactly. And it is because, like, I need to just get out of my house. I need to experience something different.
Yeah.
Which I actually think is what a snack is, if it's not specifically about hunger. Sometimes it's about tidying yourself over until your next meal. But sometimes it's like, I just need to feel something a bit different.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. You know, you pointed out there's a section on condiments in the book.
Yes.
And you were like, why do we, this generation, love condiments so much?
We love them.
We love them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing. It's like an easy route to just getting like a hit of something new. Like you might discover something amazing. It might change your life. It might be like your new condiment and you only have to pay a few pounds to try it. And they're like fun. They're sort of packed with as much flavour as possible. Mm. So you're like, I'm going to get something out of this, you know? And then they often have like nice artwork on them, and also we just like buying ourselves silly little things.
We so love silly. I think this is in your book, but you said I'm beginning to realize now that I sound a bit like someone who's been bribed by your publicist. But it's more that like I read nonfiction so rarely, and then when I do, I really fall in love with whatever's in front of me, and I've just really loved it. But this thing of like the millennial tourism into kind of little wholesale, not wholesale, like you kind of like little pantry type food shop kind of thing, where and like I live in Lewisham, which is not a rich place at all, but and like my high street is you know, there's a hardware shop and a post office and mm-hmm. a Greasy Spoon and a Coral betting shop or whatever, and also a very adorable little pantry food shop with like you know, home, like, you know, small batch beers and lovely gleaming vegetables and condiments,
kimchi's
mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. And it sort of doesn't make sense on that street if you were looking at it and you didn't know about millennials.
Yeah.
Because we're just looking at a generation of people who go, we can't afford the houses we're living in.
No.
We're pushed, I mean, gentrification is obviously a much bigger conversation outside of condiments. Yeah. We're pushed further and further out. Then we're pushing other more vulnerable people further and further out. And the one way we can sort of grip our tiny little raccoon paws on the life we think we were promised is by buying a tin of sardines that look like they came from France.
Yeah.
Or a mustard that has a like illustration on it.
That is it. You know what? I that is depressing, but true. I think this, you know, this book, which is about joy, also has just a lot of like me being depressed in it, I guess. And one thing I was thinking about was, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. You'll have to edit it out if I'm not. Mm. I'm sure it's fine. But the Times extracted this book. Mm. And when I say extracted, they just picked like a few bits at random and they turned it into their own article. They stripped all the language out of it. They changed all the headings.
Oh God, and they made so it like upsetting. I'm so sorry.
It's fine. They made it like, you know, 50 great snack recipes.
I see.
And You know, like, they completely decontextualized everything I'd written. Everything I've written is, like, tongue-in-cheek and silly, mostly, or whatever. They had turned it into something that it wasn't. And there's a section in the book called Snackettes, mm-hmm. which is a really tiny little list of just things you might grab in your kitchen, like a chunk of Parmesan mm-hmm. dipped in some balsamic. Or a digestive with cream cheese and jam on it.
Mm, like, so good.
Stuff like that.
Do you know what Gavin calls that? A cheating mess.
That's great.
I think it's great. Yeah, that's, I was like, really, you should good. Be a food writer again.
Yeah, you should.
Puns.
And basically, that little list was decontextualized even further. Somebody screen grabbed it and tweeted it and was like, is the Times feeling okay?
Oh, and no.
And it went really
so sorry.
Wild. And there were a lot of replies, and there were a lot of replies from people. It was interesting because there were replies from people going, oh my God, disgusting. But then there were a lot of replies from people going, well, that just sounds nice to me.
Yeah.
But then there were also a lot of people going, no, this is depression food. Uh-huh. And then there were people going,
oh God.
There was this one woman who was like, I had this therapy and my therapist told me to like stand in my kitchen, have a morsel of something really delicious, put it in my mouth and just feel like rooted in my kitchen. And she was like, these feel like those.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's really interesting. It's like, yeah, they kind of are depression food. You're having a bit of a boring day. Like, you're at home. You can't get out. This is the best you can do. Like, that is kind of what they are, but they're good in that way, and they do something in that moment. I can't remember where I was going.
No,
with this,
I love that. I feel very moved by that.
I don't know.
I just feel so bad for you though, because like that thing of just them stripping out all of your writing and being like,
bad.
Here are my snack recipes, a lump of cheese standing by your fridge. Of course, like, there's a certain kind of body of person on the internet who would get really annoyed by that.
Yeah,
that the Times would like print that as an article.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I feel really bad for you.
And then why did they print it as an article? Because that's not a recipe.
No.
So.
And you didn't call it a recipe.
No. And then it didn't have my name until right at the end, and I was like, that's kind of good and kind of bad because I sort of didn't write it, but then I sort of did, and I didn't know how to feel about any of it. But I was quite furious about it. Yeah. But I guess that is just also like goes to show how in the mainstream people still don't really understand snacks or how to write about them or how to think about them or how to be honest about how we eat them.
Sometimes when I talk to my friends and like men and women actually, sometimes I'm surprised to see that the men in my life have as disordered a relationship with food as the women do, and sometimes even more so because they're not encouraged to talk about it the way that we are and almost bond about it the way that women do.
Yes, true.
That, like, I don't know how it happened, but I just seem to get out of adolescence without an eating disorder. Which I think basically happens to so many women, even if they weren't, like, had a serious problem.
Yeah.
They went through a phase of, like, only eating almonds or whatever.
Yeah.
And it strikes me every time I talk to somebody who's been through that, the time wasted.
Yes.
Of just like the brains, the space in your brain that is taken up with all this information. There's that famous bit in Bridget Jones where it's like she can rattle off the calories and everything, you know? And like, it's just so much time taken from us thinking about these things.
Yeah.
It's so obvious and so annoying to say, I've just realized, but it baffles me.
I feel the same about writing as well. I feel like I spent a lot of my 20s sat trying to write, not writing, just sitting there thinking about how I couldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just wish I'd spent doing something else. Like, I wish I'd just stood up and gone and done something else instead.
Oh my God, it's so true.
And I feel like that's the same thing. If you're genuinely like, okay, it's 9 o'clock. I can have my almonds at 11.
Yeah.
And after that, nothing. Which, by the way, I don't think I've ever actually been there.
No.
But you know, I've definitely had versions of that. And yeah, that's a lot of wasted energy.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you compare it to writing, because I remember being in a kind of a writing rut at some point, and I got very, you know, when you're in those ruts and you get very into everything Elizabeth Gilbert has ever said.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I got very into the whole Big Magic vibe.
Oh, yes.
And she had a podcast on that. And so she said something that was like, give yourself permission to write a bad book.
Mm.
And there was something about just that, you know, the thing with advice, you have to just be in this place in your life where you're ready to hear
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was just, it really dug me out of a hole of like, I'm just going to write a bad book. And that kind of, that's the same sort of energy when you give yourself over to food.
Yes, it is.
You actually eat in a far healthier way.
Yeah, that like, there are so many of those quotes that are just like, well, not that that one is a crap quote, but there are a lot of bad ones. Mm. But if they hit you in the right moment, you're like, oh, that's changed my life. I think I'm going to do that.
And they really get you, a bad quote is like a good snack. It gets you through. You've done something to yourself with that.
Yeah.
It just gets you through the next couple of hours.
Yeah, it does.
There's something that I loved as well that you wrote about, which was about snacks and holidays.
Oh, yes.
And it really made me realise that when I think about all the holidays I've had in my life, and, you know, in every sort of week to 10-day long holiday,
mm-hmm.
you will have like one or two evenings where, like, we're going to the place tonight.
Yeah.
Everyone on TripAdvisor says it's amazing.
Yes.
Da, da, da. And invariably, I always go, invariably with Gav, and we're like, we get a little bit dressed up and we're a little bit tired from the day.
Yeah.
And we kind of have run out of shit to say to each other, and we're just a bit like warm, and we mm-hmm. eat the lovely bit of fish. And like, this is lovely. And we spend, you know, £140.
Yeah.
And then we never remember or speak about that meal ever again.
Yeah.
However, the odd Spanish brand of crisps that we had every day by the pool will be the meme of the holiday forever.
Yeah.
It's like, even on the way in, he was like, oh, remember when we went to Malaga and we had Ruffles Yamon for every single day?
Yeah.
For a week.
Those are great, though. My friend always gets truffle Philadelphia to dip them in.
Oh, I have
she's
not
an expert.
Known. I need this, please.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something about the foreign crisps.
Yeah.
And foreign bits in general that, like, when you're foreign, like a fucking story. But, like, yeah, something when you, that's why everyone loves going to supermarkets when they're abroad as well.
Yeah.
Of just like, I'm going to sort of not eat how the locals do, because locals aren't buying a shitload of junk food and eating it every day. But it does make you feel weirdly connected to the place where you are.
Yeah, it does. Well, it just makes you feel removed from your life, which is what you want from your holiday.
Yeah.
You don't want to be eating hula hoops on the beach. Like, those are very... Hula hoops are what my daughter screams, I want hula hoops. You know, I don't want to eat those in Greece. I want to eat something that tastes Grecian in some way.
Yeah, in some very vague way. Black olive tapenade crisp.
Yes, that's what I want. Yeah.
And there's always this thing, and it's a bit like buying clothes on holidays, where you, we're going to buy some of this to take home. And then it just kind of sits there.
Yeah.
I like that.
Oh my God, we've got some, we had these garlic manchitos in Spain that my husband became obsessed with. And then when his friend was in Lanzarote, he was like, get me some of those garlic manchitos. They've been in our cupboard for months.
Exactly.
So it's just not the same.
You just want to... And then, yeah, you eat it in your kitchen standing up at 4 o'clock or whatever, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember being in Spain.
Yeah. There was one day where we were like... We were in Melbourne, I think, and we really had no money left, but we were going for this stupid dinner because it had been booked or whatever. And then, I don't know, our reservation wasn't really there. It didn't work. And then there was a casino next door. And so for a joke, we were like, let's go in the casino. And while we were in the casino, not doing anything because we didn't have any money, the heel fell off my husband.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Shoe, and we were just like hysterical about it. And then we like went home and just ate some cheese puffs. And that is the thing I remember about that trip.
I love that.
Yeah.
I remember, that weirdly the holiday in Spain was the first time that we'd ever, it was 2 years ago now, that we'd ever ordered room service together.
Yeah.
Because it was the first time that we weren't like so broke. And just like, I just remember just ordering chips and a bottle of wine to the room.
And it's like funny.
It's funny. Like, it's really funny.
What are we doing? This is so funny. This isn't what we do.
Oh, I do love people.
Yeah, me too.
There's this bit in your book that really, in terms of the pop culture element of all of this, that really captured me, which was on big drinks.
Oh, yeah.
And about how there was this moment in the noughties where, like, little women were holding massive drinks.
Yeah. And they were using them as, like, a sort of shield, basically, against
paparazzi. Paint a visual picture for me.
So for me, like, it definitely started with The Simple Life with Paris and Nicole, because that was really probably the first TV show that I got into in that way, where it was like, oh, this is what I like. I'm a person and this is what I like to watch. And also, you know, my mum hated it, so that made me want to watch it more. And you know, it was gross in lots of ways, because they were doing these, like, regular people's jobs, but sort of in a tongue-in-cheek way, and they're obviously rich and don't need to work, and it was gross. It was absolutely gross. But it was also just like they were women who sort of were doing what they wanted to do, and they were being absolutely destroyed for it in the press, and they were just carrying on, and they were always just had drinks with straws in front of their faces.
Like
they had like lip gloss on, MAC lip gloss on, and they had big sunglasses on, and then they had drinks with straws like frappuccinos or whatever.
And huge drinks.
Huge. And Britney as well, like in those sort of, in some of those quite low moments, she would always have one of those drinks in front of her face. And I just felt like I was like an uncomfortable little teenager. I didn't really like always want to do what my friends were doing, but I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to be doing. But I used to dance. I used to do dance classes, and I used to always want to come into town to do dance classes. I lived in like suburban northwest London, but I just always loved coming into town. And I sort of, there was this point where I was like, I'm just going to go in and do a dance class by myself, get myself a frappuccino and walk around. And I just like really felt like myself that day. I was like, oh, this is, you know, I do, this is helping me feel like myself. This is making me look confident when I feel like I have no idea what I'm doing, you know? And I still sometimes feel that, and I still just enjoy slurping from a really big cup in that way, where I'm like, I'm free to choose what I want to do, to go where I want to go. I'm going to make as much noise with this drink as I want.
It's so fun. I've never put that together before, of like, when you think of those early noughties paparazzi photos of like Lindsay Lohan or Britney Spears or Paris Hilton or whatever.
Yeah,
it is just like very little clothes, very big drink.
Yeah, faces.
It is like a shield.
Yeah. I remember being in, my auntie lives in California, and I was there with her when I was like 17 or something. And I was wearing massive sunglasses and lip gloss. And someone like leaned in, her friend like leaned in her car window and was like, she looks like Paris Hilton. I do not look anything like Paris Hilton. But I was obviously doing that thing of like, you can't see my face, so I probably look good under here, but you don't you don't have a clue. That, you know, you couldn't see much of their faces most of the time, you know?
There's something, I do know what you mean, that that image is really clear to me of you as like a 16-year-old going to dance classes and not really feeling like, oh, like, it's really weird to say now, but I'm transplanted back to that adolescent thing of being doing anything by yourself.
Yeah.
Feels like a choice, and it feels like, and it's like, obviously no one's looking at you, but you feel like everyone's looking at you, yes. That girl who's alone with no friends kind of thing. Yeah. And they're all making a judgment. And there's something about holding a very big drink that's not like a bottle of Coke. That's like a thing with the straw or like a sippy thing at the top or whatever. That's like, there's something a little bit cool, and it's like a little bit bored, a little bit like I'm above this.
Yeah, like, oh, this is easy. You think I'm finding this in any way difficult? No, this is really easy for me. Look. I feel like I've released my tricks, and now when anyone's going to see me with a big drink, they're going to go, oh, she's actually very nervous.
She's very insecure, that woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the kind of rattling the ice a little, kind of playing with the straw. It's all very adolescent and very sweet, I think.
Yeah.
When talking about snacks, we can't get away from the scourge of our society, which is the small plate meal. I don't know what we're going to do, man, because it won't die.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I feel like it's at the point now where, you know, people can't afford the food they're serving. You know, it's so hard for restaurants to make money that they feel like they have to put the food on small plates because it's the only way they're going to get the food out for a price they can afford to get it out for. It just feels like it's not going anywhere now.
Yeah, no, I think, I hadn't thought of it from that point of view, in that, like, people can't afford a steak for £30, but, like, half an anglaise cut into strips with some chimichurri over it for £15 somehow seems like a more attractive option, but even though it sucks and no one's happy.
Yeah, it does. I think that's it, isn't it? I think the small plates thing went wrong, where it was like, no, this could be a big plate. Like, this should just be a plate of dinner. A small plate that is meant to be a small plate because it is a snack, fine. That's fine. But, something that is just like half a steak or like three meatballs. Or, I don't know, I couldn't even think of any because I haven't been to dinner for so long because I'm a new parent.
The worst one is that, like, the sort of two stalks of asparagus between three people. That's when it gets really depressing. Or like four white beans.
And you're chopping them.
And you're chopping them.
And you're leaving a little bit. And it's...
Yeah.
It's just asparagus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's always this thing of, it's just asparagus. It's like, it's always when you're... When I find it the most depressing. When you meet a... like maybe three to five women of your acquaintance, and you're all there for somebody's birthday or whatever, and you know, each of you have kind of earmarked in your head that like, this is her birthday dinner, we're gonna be spending some amount of money, and then you just have all these fucking small plates that you're cutting up, and because you're all like women that have been brought up in this century, you're all like too scared to take more than your share. So then you're eating it slowly and like leaving little morsels behind in case somebody else wants it. And then the waiter clears it away. And then you all look at each other frantically being like, actually, we're still picking.
Yeah.
And like, it's just...
Oh, sorry. Did you want to eat that?
And then you leave feeling so drunk and not in a nice way.
No.
Just like a bit sick and heady.
Yeah.
And you've had too much salt.
Yeah, and like and egg you're hungry. Yolks.
And egg yolks.
You've had like quite a lot of egg yolks.
Yeah.
And like mayonnaise and stuff and wine. And then that's sort of it.
It makes me so sad.
Yeah, it's sad.
But like, it's not going anywhere because like, when I'm planning a dinner with people, I was like, how about, for a laugh, we just, you know, go to like a pre-theater set menu place, maybe, where like we can all get some French onion soup and then a bit of anglaise and then a bit of custard at the end, and it costs 20 to 30 quid a head.
Yeah.
And the food is okay, but crucially we're full and we saw each other.
Yeah.
And we're not fucking horribly pissed.
And we all got the same
sick.
Amount of food as well.
Yeah.
And if we didn't want to eat it all, we didn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it never takes. And I think part of it is because the pre-theatre menu exists on a sort of eat it and beat it economy.
Yes.
And that way, so you're like, if you're waiting for like 3 months to catch up with this group of women or whatever, and then you're suddenly, the dinner's over in less than an hour, then that's sort of,
yeah.
Everyone's got a babysitter for no reason.
Yeah.
And so hence, we must bankrupt ourselves on two stalks of asparagus and one meatball.
Yeah.
Mm. And that is devastation, I think.
It is, isn't it? And to be honest, I can't even really think of that many restaurants on my list. Like, I can't really think of any restaurants that people are excited about right now that are just regular size plates.
Yeah.
I actually can't really think of many of them.
No. And we're like, not to brag, we're Londoners.
Yeah.
there are recipes. There are restaurants. Yeah, there's a thing that you say in your book of like, sort of 2015, I think you said you moved to LA for a while. Is that true?
Yeah, for like 4 months.
Very glamorous. Very jealous of that. But also this thing of like, you were leaving London during this time of like the restaurant trend of like Edison bulbs and exposed brickwork and very unimaginative meals. And it being this thing of like, London rents are so high that every new idea has to work.
Yeah, people can't afford the gambles so much, I don't think.
Yeah.
People just, I mean, like maybe I'm being really unfair, but it just doesn't feel like anywhere near as experimental as a lot of other cities or as, definitely as LA, like, and LA is not perfect either, I'm aware of that, but yeah, it just all felt like it had got quite boring. And to be honest, I'm not sure that it's come on that far since. And that was quite a long time ago.
This was my next point, which is that I do think that as a food city, London just isn't one.
No.
Like there are some great like hole-in-the-wall type places and obviously lots of like cuisine from all around the world. So if you're looking for variety, you can find it. But in terms of like the restaurants that people are going to, in sort of central-ish or East London, or North London even, for like their date nights, their occasion eating, you are going to find the most boring and flavourless food in the world, I think. And I think about this all the time.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to all the London restaurateurs that may or may not be listening. But I think this because I'm from this like quite, you know, provincial little city called Cork in Ireland.
Yeah.
And something my family are very into food. And so they always ask like what kind of stuff I'm eating in London or whatever. And I was like, listen, the average 3-star restaurant in Cork is 10 times better than the average 3-star restaurant in London. Because London is like has this, it depends on this constant stream of foot traffic. So there's really no need to improve dishes.
Yeah.
It just has to kind of be okay and basically on trend.
Yeah.
Whereas,
and have those light bulbs and that brickwork.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I sometimes feel like, you know, I am so cynical, and I think Rich, my husband, is the same. Like, literally the other day, someone that we know in Walthamstow had said they'd gone to this cafe, and Rich was like, oh, what did it look like? Like, and they were like, no, it looked like cool. And he was like, no, but what did it look like? Did it just look like the same? Did it just look the same as all the cafes? Did it have the same
white walls?
Yeah.
High sort of wooden stool kind of bar type things. A couple of couch seats in a navy. Two pillows. Yeah, sad.
And the same like stoneware.
Yes.
And yeah.
And then
I feel like just such a vibe killer because like this person was excited about this.
I know, you don't want to be that person.
No, and we were like, oh, it's just another one. It's just another one of those.
But then like every now and then you go in somewhere that's like, for want of a better word, like a cafe from the 90s.
Mm.
You know, where it's like there's loads of like flyers and shit by the door.
Yeah.
It's like the door is just like covered in shit.
Yeah.
And like take one and all this kind of stuff. There's always a big Anzac cookie wrapped in cling film.
Yes.
And, that are sold by the till. And just like it's there's too many colors and there's like a vague psychedelic vibe. Mm-hmm. And none of the furniture matches. And there's one big couch that like a bunch of students
ripped.
Are living on,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I just want to see a return of the not so much a community cafe, but just like quasi-arty, but with no real sense of snobbery.
Yeah.
Cozy, cheap vibe.
Yeah. And just like imagination, maybe. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Just like, we painted this wall green. We don't know why, but we did it. We liked it.
Or like, we have a performing arts space downstairs, kind of.
Yeah.
So, like, sort of.
Yeah.
Right now, Lance's girlfriend has an art show down there. Want to go downstairs and look? Not really, but I will.
I will.
In terms of, like, the absolute nadir of fucking awful snacks. And this also, I think, falls into the, you know, snacks for rent. Sort of working in a cafe for a few hours thing of just having to buy something.
Yeah.
Those fucking little protein balls. Have you seen them around?
Oh, yeah.
They are.
Do you know there is...
depression.
Oh, sorry to keep bringing this back to Walthamstow. And God forbid the owner of this business is listening. But there is a business in Walthamstow that is literally the frozen fruit that I buy from Sainsbury's and put in my Nutribullet mm-hmm. and give to my kid as a ice cream / smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
They're making those. That's what they're making. That's what they're... There's nothing else going in them. It's just frozen fruit, blended up. It's not always even blended. It's often just like got lumps of banana in it. And you know, it's £6.50 a bowl or whatever. And it's always busy.
People will fucking spend money. People have no money right now and they will spend money on anything.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I actually, in my family's in the snack business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my mum owns a sweet shop. Yeah.
Oh.
And it's actually, people are always like, oh, what was that like growing up? And she weirdly opened it the year that I moved to London. It was like her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So she's in Cork still?
She's in Cork still, yeah. And so she owns this, little, it's kind of like, it's interesting actually about... That whole business model, and like obviously, I'm kind of conscious that we're being very London specific, but I think most of these trends are global. Actually, if you live in any kind of city, the Oxford Street sweet shop thing,
yes.
She has this very tiny little space, and she kind of has this mix between like old sweets in jars kind of thing, also more like novelty American snacks. And I think like snacking and novelty is a big thing. I mean, it's like what the condiments and mustards are for millennials.
Yes.
It's like younger people just like, they are eating the most disgusting shit. Like my mom is like horrified. She's like, I am buying the most disgusting stuff and people are buying it at like £6 a pop. Like, you know, sort of, what was it? Like Guinness flavoured crisps or something. No, not even them, but like worse than that. Like red lemonade flavoured crisps.
Oh,
like
God.
That kind of level. And like obviously,
I remember M&S doing Prosecco flavoured crisps. Yeah. Were really bad.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, it's like that thing that Walkers did for years, right? Mm. Of like, oh, squirrel flavoured and tikka masala and all that kind of stuff. People will just like, just want to try it, man.
Yeah.
You know, feel
I
different.
Hadn't really noticed the sweet shop thing getting bigger. But I think even in the last couple of years, because my friend left London like 3 years ago. She lives in the Peak District now.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was down recently, she came to mine on the Sunday and she'd been around for a few days. And I was like, how's your time in town? And she was like, a lot of sweet shops, aren't there? A lot of sweet shops. And I was like, oh, I guess maybe there are a lot of sweet shops.
Yeah.
I hadn't realised.
And weirdly, I think there's a lot of competing theories on what the Oxford Street sweet shops are doing. I think there's a lot of theories about like it being a front for something and it being linked to all this kind of shady money. But you go in, people are buying stuff.
Yeah.
So the front is working.
Yeah.
And this like, you know, my mum, she drives a lot of like her, she gets a lot of business, and she also gets a lot of business ideas from TikTok.
Okay.
And like sweet talk is a big thing.
Your mum is very cool, isn't she?
Yeah, we're getting. Yeah, she is kind of cool. She's a very cool lady.
She started a sweet shop when you left.
When her youngest child left home, like her empty nester project
was
starting
a
sweet shop. Yeah, I'm very proud. She'd never had a job.
Oh,
I know. And it was like Ireland was in the middle of this massive recession, and this actually links back, which is she'd never been in business her entire life. I think she'd worked as a secretary when she was we were very, very small, but mostly she was a stay-at-home mum. And my dad was reaching retirement age, and there was this massive economic recession, and you know, things were really bad for the whole country. And she was like, people, the only things people buy in a recession are sweets, lipstick, and magazines.
Interesting.
Yeah. And she was wrong about the magazines, because that business is completely folded. But in terms of like both the confectionery and the beauty business, since the last economic recession, both of those industries have quadrupled. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that is because we love silly little things.
Silly little things that make us feel like we're not poor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It goes back to the thing of like the poorest boroughs in London having the most expensive pantry shops.
Yes.
It's all of a piece. So we should probably get to wrapping up, but I've really loved this. Snacks as kind of snacking culture. I think we've touched a lot of places and gone surprisingly deep.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
I hadn't realised how much it relates to the economy at large, but it truly does. But in terms of pop culture, is there any, like, we've talked a little about Paris Hilton and the big drinks, but like, is there anything else that sticks in your mind?
Something I thought was interesting was that you mentioned a couple of like snacks in films and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any like really big like pinnacle moments in movies or anything. But what my friends have noticed about me is that whenever someone is eating something on screen and it's really inconsequential and you really don't need to know what they're eating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can't really even see what they're eating, I will start craning my neck and going, what's he?
Yes.
What's he eating? What's he eating? And I think that is because the sort of little things that people eat while they're doing their other things are
they're
the
character
most
signifiers,
interesting to me.
I think.
Yeah.
They really are. I've mentioned The Gilmore Girls several times. It's only because I'm doing this massive rewatch so we can do an episode on it. I don't know if you ever watched that show.
A bit. No, I haven't ever got deep into it.
But that is a show that name checks junk food and snack food all the time, to the point where I do think people are irritated by it. It is the Gilmore Girls version of Carrie Bradshaw having too much money for being a columnist. And my retort to the Carrie Bradshaw thing has always been like, Carrie Bradshaw is such a famous columnist that she's on the side of a bus. Like, she gets paid very well.
Yeah.
Like, she's like Caitlin Moran level, except she has no family. Like, come on, she's famous. Like, she's got a lot of money.
That's true.
At least in the early seasons, I think it's like, I always say to people, it's like, listen, if you're jealous that you can't get the same money that Carrie Bradshaw got for her columns, just say so.
Yeah.
But don't bring her choices into this. And similarly, people sort of hate the Gilmore Girls for many reasons, and some of them good. But one of them is that like these two incredibly thin women, all they do is eat Pop-Tarts and marshmallows, and they just eat like children on a sleepover all the time.
Yeah.
But I find it to be these very like interesting sort of character things, because it's like they don't eat anything else. Like, they don't eat three square meals at all.
They
just snack. They eat pancakes in the morning, and sometimes they have a burger at night, and the rest of the time they're just snacking all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're making a show about like a woman who like had a baby at 16, ran away from her parents, became a maid, and took her child with her everywhere, and had to have a lifestyle around that, it's like, yeah, she's eating Pop-Tarts.
Of course she's eating Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, that's what they've normalized within that house. And I feel like it's actually a very good character detail. And this other thing of like, you know, this character who's, sorry, you don't care about the Gilmore Girls, but here I go. This character who went from living in a house where there were maids and food was cooked by a cook every night, and then suddenly is living this incredibly working class existence as a maid. It's like, you first of all, she can't cook.
Yeah.
Why would she know how to?
Yeah, I mean, have you like that recent Kardashians episode where I think it was Kendall was like pretending that she knew how to slice a vegetable, and it was just like, oh wow, she literally doesn't know how to do that.
The Kardashians have reached a new level recently where I've been uninterested for years, but I've come round now because I've seen a few bits like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm quite interested in this now because they're so famous and so alien that
it's mad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But sorry, to finish off that Gilmore Girls rant, it's also like these are incredibly cheap foods. And if you're talking about these people who have only ever had the money to just hang out and watch movies their entire lives and not being able to drink, not being able to do all these things, of course, you use sort of like snack food and junk food as your one vice.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of Caitlin Moran, reminds me of something she wrote about years ago, which is overeating is the carer's disease. Because, you know, if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict or whatever, you can't have that vice and still wake up in the morning and look after people.
Yeah, yeah.
So like eating a bag of marshmallows or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that you can still get up and wash your child in the morning, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one moment I can think of where I completely was like, I am not watching this show anymore. Like, I was watching Breaking Bad with everyone else and I was not enjoying it at all. I was just like, I find everyone gross. It's gross. I don't like it. Mm. And then I just remember like one morning he was making waffles and I was just like, gross. I'm not watching this anymore.
Why?
And it wasn't like there wasn't anything specific about the waffles, but they had obviously made like the sound extra gloopy. And I was just like, I don't want this in my life. And, you know, that was a good character signifier because there's nothing wrong with waffles. Waffles can be good, but the way that he was making them and the sort of sounds that were coming across while he was making them, and it just, he was gross. And so I stopped watching. But I definitely like, you know, there's also sort of like, I don't know, just like moments in EastEnders where someone's having like a cone of chips while they're having like a big chat or something. And you're like, yeah, I get that.
I know who this is.
I know who that is. I know what it smells like. I know what's happening.
It's good. And like, yes. One bit that really gets me, I have quite an emotional response to the film Home Alone.
Yes.
I think because I'm a youngest child and I understand that Kevin McAllister feeling of like being a kind of runty one at the end who kind of gets sort of forgotten a bit. My parents never left me. They never went to Paris without me. But there's a bit at the beginning of the movie where like everyone's just being a bit of a dick to him, and he's being a bit of a dick, but like it's like they're just not being nice to him.
No,
they're
running around him,
and they all order pizza. And he just wanted a cheese pizza.
A whole cheese pizza just for me. That's literally...
I say that like every day in our house. Like every day we eat anything, I say to Gav, a lovely cheese pizza just for me.
That's literally basically what my book's about.
I'm so glad that quote sticks in your head as well.
Admitting and acknowledging, this is what I want and I've got it in front of me. Isn't that great?
When he has his lovely cheese pizza just for him. And like, it's such an amazing character detail for a child of like, because we all remember that part when like putting complicated things on pizzas and pepperoni is too spicy and mushrooms are too slithery and like you just can't handle it. And he's just want my cheese and my tomato and my bread. And like, it's such a simple request and no one's honouring it.
And you can all just keep buzzing around me and ignoring me and treating me like shit because I've got my lovely cheese pizza.
Just for me. So important.
Very important.
All right, Laura Goodman. I think that was fun.
That was super fun. Thank you so much for having me.
The Joy of Snacks is out now, and your first book, Carbs, also around.
It is.
Yeah.
And probably quite cheap now, so go get it.
I'm going to get it, I want to see bread in an urn or however the fuck you do it.
Yeah.
If there's one, like, recipe in your book that you, in snacks, that what would you think?
Probably the cheese ball. And it's the one I'm... find myself making the most since I wrote it and talking about the most. And it is probably the most sentimental garbage because it's a cheese ball, which when I wrote that recipe, or when I started thinking about cheese balls, I didn't necessarily know what they were. I knew that they were balls of cheese, obviously, but I didn't really know. I knew they were something that to be scorned, kind of. Like, that's how I knew them.
When you say,
like,
cheese balls, what exactly do you mean? You mean those, like, you get them in the big tubs at Christmas?
No.
Those guys. Is that the cheese soccer balls kind of thing?
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, like, it's like an American thing. You get a load of cream cheese. You fill it with stuff. Like, the one in my book has, like, Worcestershire sauce, cheddar.
Mm.
I've forgotten everything, mustard, whatever. You roll it up and then you coat it in something. And my one is coated with pretzels. Mm. And then you all just sort of like dip into it.
Ooh.
And it's like a joke food. Like I write about an episode of Schitt's Creek where it's like, oh God, they're so lowly here that they eat cheese balls. And like they're very scornful of it. And then when they... like, in my imagination, when they come round, they're just eating cheese balls and they're like, oh, this is actually really good. And I just feel like that is the embodiment of, like, embracing snacks for what they are and just going, yeah, fuck it, I'll eat a cheese ball.
I'll eat a cheese ball.
I'll eat a ball of cheese.
One thing your book has really changed my eating habits. It's actually your book in the combination with several very well-placed TikTok videos that have been shown to me, which is that, I think I said at the beginning of the podcast, dips have really changed my life for the better, actually.
Yeah.
Because you just start with your Greek yogurt, a bit like a clove of garlic or two, some lemon juice, salt and pepper, maybe a spoon of mayo or something. Mix that all together and then like put in whatever the fuck
whatever
you want.
Whatever you like. Yeah.
What I like is here's my one of two things I'll do. Either like I'll chop up lots of like a whole thing of cornichons. As you can see, it's a real problem in my house. Whole thing of cornichons, whole thing of dill chopped up really fine. Mm. And caramelise some shallots and then just wing that all in together. That's the best thing in the world. And that's if like someone's coming over.
Yeah.
And what I love to have that out with some crisps and then order Deliveroo.
Yeah.
And like they're really impressed by the dip.
Yes.
And also we're getting Deliveroo.
Yeah.
So I'm really present with you. To me, that is peak entertaining in my home. The second thing, which is I'm alone for the evening, is the base that you think that the Greek yogurt, the garlic, lemon juice, salt, mayonnaise, and then in a frying pan an entire bag of spinach with some parmesan and just fry all that down until it's like a cheesy spinachy mess, and then fuck that into the yogurt and then eat that whole thing with like an oven, one of those like demi baguettes that are like they're half baked and put them in the oven. And like you've just eaten a whole bag of spinach and some Greek yogurt for your dinner.
Yeah.
And it took 10 minutes.
And what's bad about that?
That's nothing. Really, that's quite good for you, actually.
That's good for you.
It feels trashy, but it's very good for you.
Yeah.
So
I would like you to try that yogurt dip in there that's got like chili butter on the top of it. Because
yes.
I think you might be quite into that.
Yeah, I think I will.
Yeah. Try that one.
There's also a bit in your book where you talk about what would your favourite cheese be.
Oh yeah,
you don't have cheese the rest of your life, and I thought a lot about it.
Three cheeses
obviously. The first is cheddar.
Mm-hmm.
Second is the like a feta,
because
it just goes in so many couscous, rice, whatever, you know, spices up a nice dish. The third, I'm afraid, is individually wrapped slices of American cheese.
Okay.
Oh my God, I can't believe you're shaming me on that.
I'm not shaming you. It's not shame, it's just you've got three forever.
Yeah, I know. But the thing with the American cheese is I fucking my instant ramen.
My brother chose Port Salut for one of his, and I was like, that is...
No.
You're going to eat Port Salut for the rest of your life and you're not going to have mozzarella. That is going to be weird for you.
Oh, yeah. The mozzarella thing, that does make pizza
yes.
a situation, and I would rather die than ever order a white pizza anywhere.
Yeah.
All right, we should wrap up. But this has been wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for coming on. It's very early in the morning on a Friday, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.